But this idea of stories, the where this ideas were generated for me, or the maybe not, but I was reading in Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj in his book I Am That, and one of the startling things he says in there is only the present exists. The past is a fiction, the future is a fiction. And he says that every moment the universe is recreated fresh and new, and that each moment has no relationship to the previous moment. Mm. Only your ego insists on creating a set of relationships that tie this moment to this moment. And he says that's why you cannot see God, because you are distorting your perceptions to maintain the motion of linear time, of cause and effect. He says there is no cause and there is no effect. What you call cause and effect is only repetition.
Can you give an example, Maurice?
Yeah, well, he's just saying, you know, if I push this on the floor, it falls on the floor, and I think, oh, I pushed that on the floor, that's the cause, the effect is it falls down and breaks. Every time I do it, it does the same thing. But he says there is not a relationship between the two. But because it repeats, we call it cause and effect. Because it won't always happen the same way. You know. So he just makes that statement. There is no cause and effect. What we call cause and effect is only repetition. Which I find, you can just meditate on that for a while. That's a very interesting idea. And it's sort of what has brought that whole lineup for me, that idea of the past attachments, the future desire, and only being present in the moment. Because I find that the most comforting thing that I can do for myself is stop thinking for a moment. Put my worries aside, put my story aside, put my problem du jour aside, and just feel myself breathe for a minute, you know, and just come back in and open all the senses. Let everything in without discrimination. Actually feel my fingers. Actually feel my legs crossed and touching each other. Actually feel my heart beat and the heat coming off of my own body. Just breathe into that. And then just start to let that wonder, that amazement, the fact that you have no explanation for any of it, you don't know the nature of any of it, you have no understanding of any of it, and you're not in charge of any of it. You know? You're not in charge of any of it.
What's happening?
Yeah, and just sit there and understand that. My heart's beating of its own accord. It doesn't need me there to go pick, 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 pick.
Well, know? I have a pacemaker.
My lungs. My lungs are breathing. Yeah, but you're still not doing anything. Do you know how it works?
No.
Oh, well, there you go.
I'm getting a new battery soon.
Same condition. These things are going on, and it's the mind who wants to constantly think, I'm in charge. I'm making these things happen. Mm-hmm. This life needs me. But the mind can't, you can't even control your own body. You know, you don't even know what's happening in this apparatus that you inhabit. You don't even know if it exists. You can't even verify that it's there.
Isn't it the truth that my husband needs me to give him the care?
Yes.
How do I make the story then?
Because you just be present, and the love that's in you for your husband will do the right thing of its own accord. You're just present. Just be present. You by nature are so loving. You by nature have an infinite amount of energy for love, because it is what you are. And if you're fully present with your husband, you will be able to love him like you've never loved him before. If you keep the story will make you tired, because the story tells you, I've been doing this too long. You know, I've been doing this too much. That's the story, and that's the weight you're dragging along that's unnecessary.
Yes.
Because you're here right now, you haven't done anything right now. You are. You're fresh and new. Do something and leave it go. Do something and leave it go. Attachments are our burden. When you don't let it go, when you let them, when you store them in the memory and then run the weave of story through them, then you're exhausted. Ugh, I've done too much. You know, I had a very odd experience one time when I was in San Francisco. There's this street called Lion Street that's all stairs. It's a beautiful street. It goes through the richest houses in the neighborhood. And I used to run those, not run them. I used to climb those stairs, three blocks of stairs. And I used to do them six times, right? And I would get so tired. And I just, there was this one block. The street's really steep. And it's just one continuous steep flight of stairs for a whole block. And I always hated that one because the other two blocks were sort of, you'd go up a flight of stairs and walk through a garden, then up through another flight of stairs and walk through another garden and up another flight of stairs. That was great. But this one, the whole block was like that. And I was so tired one day doing it, and that battle was going on inside. I'm not going to do six today. I'm just doing this three, and then I'm quitting. And this whole idea of the story that I had heard in a lecture about the chariot, how the body is the chariot, the senses are the horses, the intellect, you know, that I'm the driver, mm-hmm. and that I should drive the body shouldn't drive me. So I thought about that, and I thought, wow, okay, let's do that. I'm not this body, so let me just not pay attention to what it's saying. Let me become the driver now and ride my body up these stairs instead of being my body and identifying with it being tired. Crazy change in the experience of it. Just radically different experience to ride my body up the stairs instead of being the body climbing up the stairs. Hmm. Very different. New energy, new ability. I finished those six times without any effort. And even to this day, I use that. This morning, I was up on my little elliptical for my 15 minutes, you know, and the first three are okay. The four through six, it goes up to some pretty high levels, and I'm like, and then that's when the sweating starts. And, you know, and I'm always like, just 10 minutes today will be fine. I don't have to do 15, you know. And then I always remember, ride the body. Don't be in the body. Ride it. It can do this. It's made to do this. It's supposed to do this. Totally different experience. Totally different level of empowerment to be in control and to do what you want to do. So do that. Yeah. When you're sitting when you're with your husband and the memories are coming up, you feel like you've been doing this too long, tell yourself, I've never done this before. This moment is brand new. The conditions, everything is new. Nothing is the same as it was the last time I did this. Why do I associate it as the same thing? Not one cell in my body's in the same place. Not one thought is in the same place. Everything is different. Let it be new. Let me do it for the first time again. And it will make a big difference. Yeah. Not if you can. It's easy to do, but the hard part is not giving yourself permission to do it. We don't give ourselves permission because of our attachment, you know, because of our attachment. And it's always healthy. It's funny, I've had this conversation at least three times this week. This attachment, this permission, give yourself permission to be free. The ego has all kinds of reasons that you can't, that you shouldn't. You are in charge. That part of you that's in charge, give yourself permission to let go. Give yourself permission to not be responsible for this heap of attachments that have lined up with a particular story at your doorstep. Don't answer the door. Be irritating like me and let the phone ring. You know?
And not return calls.
Yeah. Well, nobody ever calls me. That's my story. All right, so are we on the seventh letter? Did we finish the sixth?
Yes, you went over some of it again, didn't you?
Yeah, I did go over a lot of stuff again last time.
I think we ended on the sixth letter. Start here. So,
So when?
Yeah.
Oh. So when?
The next to the last paragraph, in the middle.
In the sixth letter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it starts with?
So when.
Mine doesn't start with so when.
No, it's in the middle of that.
It is however. Oh, okay, there it is. All right. And you know, I always go back because because I like to figure out what the flow was. It's always so intriguing that I can't help but bringing it up again. I love what it says here because it really speaks to what we're talking about right now. He says, I do not say that therefore we must put any violent constraint upon ourselves. All right, this isn't an act of violence, taking charge of the moment. And it's important because a lot of times we think that it is because we haven't set down the attachments yet. If you don't set down your attachments, if you keep the story alive and then try to act differently in the present than what they're demanding, then it's a huge battle. It's a huge wrestling. It is a violent constraint.
Yeah.
That's why you have to set down the attachment first. Stop the story first. Don't listen to it. Absolutely just don't listen to it. Just shut down and go from there. There's no wrestling at all. There's no wrestling at all. You are the only one in the moment. You are the only one here. And everything is at your command. So be what you want to be in the moment. It's just a matter of being. There's no fight going on. There's no fight going on. That's something that I learned early on. If I allow there to be a fight, if I admit to there being a fight, say that I say no to eating a piece of cake. I've said no. There's no fight. There's nothing. If I allow there to be a fight, it's because I'm not putting down my attachments, right? If I allow there to be a fight, I have already lost. Because it's a trick of mind. Because the mind says, fight. And when you fought long enough, you can feel good about it and eat the piece of cake. You see how the mind is?
Mm-hmm.
But if you understand there's no fight, I said no, boom. Mind, you don't have permission to bring that up again. I said no. The mind is your disciple. The mind is your disciple. Train it. After a while, it will understand when you say no, you mean it. After a while, the story of repetitive failure will have changed because you have a succession of nows that are different. That's willpower. But, you know, we have weird ways of thinking about willpower. Oh, I don't have any willpower. I can't possibly do this. I'm not strong enough. You know, it's isness more than willpower. It's isness, being what you want to be. Being clear on what you want to be. I want to be with the beloved. I want to be in perfect harmony. I want to be spiritual. I want to see these promises that have been given to me. I want to see them. I want to experience them. That's what I want. I don't want a piece of cake. Good God. How many pieces of cake have I had? And look, I still need them. That's ridiculous. If they were giving me anything, I wouldn't need them by now. I must have eaten 1,000 of them. Right? This is discrimination. This is discrimination. Think about how you're going to feel right after you finish the cake. The joy is not there anymore. After it goes across that 1.5 inches of tongue, it's finished. It's given you all it can give you. Now what does it leave you? A sad story. That's all it gives you. Oh, I gave in again and ate another piece of cake. And then all the requisite ideas build up behind that, right? I'm awful. I don't have any self-control. I'll never be able to realize God. I'm never going to be able to be spiritual. All those things. All because you silly cow, you ate a piece of cake. Mm-hmm. So what? You know, stop it.
You can eat pizza instead.
Yes, eat a pizza instead.
What sort of helped me is the idea that you don't have to act on your thoughts.
You don't. That's right.
Okay, because sometimes people, they have thoughts come up that are they call bad thoughts or embarrassing thoughts or whatever, and they try to repress them and they wrestle against themselves. The better thing to do is just let things out but not act on it.
That's it. That's exactly it right there, because that's not having a violent constraint. If you're repressing, which means you've already entered into a battle, you've already admitted this is a fight, so you've lost already. If you manage to hold out for a short time by repressing, that's going to go and get a little, few more people for its army, a few more warriors, and it's going to come back and just whop you, you know. It's going to come back. I call it spiritual hernia. You know? It's a spiritual hernia. When you refuse to let something that wants to be expressed be expressed, and you repress it, you get a spiritual hernia, you know. You start thinking weird about things. It's really quite true. It's really quite true.
I mean, if you're angry at somebody, you're angry at somebody. But yeah. you don't have to do violence to them.
Yeah, but you don't even admit that the I is attached to it. I'm not angry. Mind is angry.
Okay.
Right? Now that brings us come back to yet another loop that we keep talking about, right? The only three things you can say about yourself that are true, what are they?
I exist.
Love.
I love.
I'm intelligent.
Any other thing that you want to say is a lie. All the other attributes belong to mind. I'm jealous. I'm angry. I'm hungry. I'm irritated. I'm lonely. I'm sad. All of those belong to mind. None of them belong to you. So don't use the word I when you talk about those things. The mind is angry. The body is hungry. The mind is resentful. The mind is in a bad mood. The mind is lonely. Yeah. Because you need to exert the truth.
You said the three things we can say, I exist.
Satchitananda.
I love. And
I'm intelligent.
How does that fit in?
That's the chit.
Oh, that's the chit.
The mind. The knowledge, the buddhi, the intelligence. Those are the only three true things that you can say about yourself. And so don't be fooled. By saying I with anything else, you empower something that's not you. Your I is your battery, it's your power source. Whatever you attach it to is empowered. I'm lusting. I'm not lusting. The body's lusting. And why? What has that ever done for me? Mm-hmm. You know? What is it, body, that you think you're going to get from that? What is it? Name it. Tell me what it is. Not the event. What is the actual thing you're looking for in that activity? Has it ever given it to you? Ever? Has it given you intimacy? Has it given you satisfaction? And if it did, why are you asking for it again? See? That's all. So he's saying don't put any violent constraint upon ourselves. No, we must serve God in holy freedom. Yes, that's that holy freedom. The presence of the beloved in your mind makes it holy, and the freedom to set down your baggage is its expression. I don't have to carry this. We must do our business faithfully, without trouble or disquiet. Yes, because the trouble and disquiet is when you're not letting go of the attachments. You're still going to make an argument for falling. Still trying to make an argument. And how do we respond to that trying to make an argument? Recalling our mind to God mildly.
Sorry.
All right? It's all right. It's a pretty sound. Recalling our mind to God mildly and with tranquility. So we're not fighting, you see. We are accepting a truth. No violence. We're not imposing anything. We're setting down attachments. We're reminding ourselves gently of the presence of the beloved. We're feeling that holiness. And we're moving forward. As often as we find our mind wandering from him. That's the end of the paragraph. So this is something you have to do again and again. And you'll feel the doing it again and again up front at the beginning. After a while, once the samskara has been established, Once the presence of God has become a habit, you've set your sail. The boat will blow by grace from that point forward. See, that's what Thakur means, set your sail. That's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't take long to set the sail. You just do it. And then the winds of grace will carry you to the goal. All right, now into new territory.
Mm-hmm.
It is, however, necessary to put our whole trust in God, laying aside all other cares and even some particular forms of devotion, though very good in themselves, yet such as one often engages in unreasonably, because these devotions are only means to attain to the end. All right, yeah. I don't know exactly what he's saying there. Let's see. It is, however, necessary to put our whole trust in God. Now, this is very important, because this is the big tool of the mind, the big weapon that it has, that it will yield. Because it will tell you, these things give your life color. These make your life interesting. These are what you are. If I don't do this, what will I do? If I don't let this happen, what will be interesting? The mind, that's the biggest weapon of the mind. So what is that? How do you answer that? Trust in the Lord. What does it mean, the trust in the Lord? I don't feel his presence. That doesn't matter. It's not like God appears and disappears. God is, always. You forget and don't forget. You remember and don't remember. You're distracted and not distracted. You turn around and look the other way or not. But God is always equally present. And God is always perfect. So to have this absolute faith in God is to be willing to sit down and rest in God. Be blissful because God is. Not to wait for God to appear so that you can be blissful. That's nonsense. God is already here. The very source of bliss is your very own. You don't have to wait or find it. Sit down and let it be. You're in the presence of your beloved, for crying out loud. If you can't imagine what that means, then think of the person or the thing that you love the most and abstract the feelings that it inspires in you, and then put those feelings on the presence of God. That's what it was anyway. That's what it was anyway. Laying aside all other cares. Okay, that's laying aside your cares, that's your attachments, right? And your desires. So laying aside your past and future. And even some particular forms of devotion. Okay, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Even some particular forms of devotion. And what particular forms? He says the devotions that are only a means to attain an end. A lot of us think that our devotions, these things that we do, are what are going to put us in the presence of God, or that it's necessary to get ourselves into a particular condition before we can enjoy the beloved. Not true. Not true. So those forms of devotion you set aside, those forms of devotion that claim that they're necessary before you can enjoy bliss, before you can enjoy the presence of God. God is always with you. Always. You know, that beautiful story about Girish. Beautiful story about me. You know, what does mother say to him? You know, Thakur, that's the thing, I always say it, but I love it so much because it's so deeply meaningful to me, that Thakur never told Girish to stop drinking. That was given. He never pointed at him.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do that with yourself. You don't have to... You should be. Because what happens when you sit there and say, you should be? You start blocking it out. And what are you doing when you're blocking it out? You're becoming unconscious. You're leaving the presence. So stop the nagging. Stop the nagging. What does Thakur tell him to do? Hey, Girish, when you drink a glass of wine, before you drink it, hold it up and thank mother for the bliss that you believe yourself to be getting from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because what will happen? The more that he remembers mother, the less he needs that glass of wine. The more he feels the gentleness of the beloved, the less he has to hide in the intoxication of a glass of wine. So that's the way it is. And this is a very hard teaching to do. You know, imagine you in your messiest vices, inviting the conscious thought of God to share it with you. Ow! You know, that's like inviting your mother and, well, I shouldn't talk like that, but but that's what it's like. Everybody knows exactly where I was going.
What's interesting is Buddha, Jesus, and Ramakrishna accepted people as they were.
Yes.
And, you know, some people say, well, these are bad people, don't associate with them. But they weren't that way.
Yeah, bad people, the people that you shouldn't associate with, are not because of what they are. It's because your weakness in what you are.
Yeah.
It's not because they're not good people. It's because you're a dweeb. And you need to fix that first so that you can become strong enough to hang out with those people and to love them without falling, without you know, messing up your own mind. That's also the problem is with you and not with them.
Because there's people that work with drug addicts and alcoholics and prostitutes and so forth and try to help them out of their situation without condemning them.
Yeah, that's exactly the way. You know, look at the people that hang around the not everybody that hangs around incarnations are great people. There's in every incarnation, in the story of every incarnation, you'll always find a prostitute.
Yeah, that's true.
Always. Very interesting little piece there. He hangs out with the Bohemians. Why? I don't know. I have my suspicions. I don't know if that's worth a lesson, though. Well, let's move on.
Swami Vivekananda also didn't judge.
Yeah. No, it's true. Ramakrishna went to a brothel.
Yeah.
I love that story.
I don't want to do that.
What's wrong in that?
That's not on my bucket list.
Going to a brothel?
Yeah.
If you're going, like, for the reason Ramakrishna went, there's no trouble at all.
I always have a sadness for those girls. Most of them, as far as I know, were forced to be in that situation. That's why I never hate them. My experience is very, very limited. But there is no question of hate.
Yes, very good. That's very, very good. Because anybody in a vice is being forced into it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether by somebody else or by their own mind, either way, they're being forced. Because they don't know these things.
We shouldn't feel pity? Compassion.
Not pity.
No pity.
Not pity. What's the value in pity? Pity puts you up here and them down here. You know, just feel what you are. Feel the natural response to somebody caught. See yourself in that situation and act accordingly.
We all have our own vices. But you got to criticize somebody else for a vice that they have, but you don't.
Yes.
But you don't criticize yourself for your own vices.
No, that's it. And it's easy to pick on somebody who has a vice that you don't. You know, you don't pick on the people that share your vice. Oh, that's not necessarily true, actually. Anyway, sometimes it's a means of not accepting. You deny your own by picking on them, changing your focus. So anyway, so this is the thing. It's necessary to put your whole trust in God. And what that to me means, that's so rich in what that means. Assume God's presence. Assume your realization. Assume your perfection. Assume your purity. Why? Because you are all of those things? No. But because God is seeing all of those things in you. Trust him. When he looks at you, he doesn't see a mess. He sees the beloved. He sees the realized self in you. That's why he's able to love you so unconditionally, because he knows you like you don't know yourself. He sees your highest ideal, your perfection. To trust in him is to believe that, against all of the evidence that your mind and ego present to you about what and who you are. It's a story. It's not true.
So God loves everyone?
Yes.
even though if the, you know, then how come, you know, there's so much misery, you know, with the Bahamas and things like that, you know, if he's love, how could he allow that?
Well, what is it that you don't think is loving about that?
Those people suffering.
Yeah, in a sense, it's true. This is a hard teaching, mm-hmm. and it's hard for me because I don't have the right to teach it, because I'm not one of the people who are in that hurricane situation. But it takes me back to a story that I've shared in the book that I need to find again. My friend Lalita read it one time. It's a book that's a collection of stories by the survivors of the Holocaust. Mm. And one of the letters that the essays that she wrote to me was about this man that was in the camps. And he said this. He said, "I didn't think about my past because it hurt too much. And I didn't think about my future because I didn't have one. So I set myself to alleviating the suffering of my fellow prisoners. And that made all the difference." You see, it's our attachments. This is the hard teaching. It's our attachments that make us define what is good and what's bad. We see somebody born into poverty. We like wealth. So, oh, that poor person born into poverty. They may have more loving relationships in their family. They may have more joyful days. They may have all of those things because wealth doesn't make a difference. It's neutral. Having it or not having it is not going to affect your ability to be blissful. You are blissful. As a matter of fact, it may be a favor because they won't think that it's their money making them blissful if there is none. Whereas you think that you're blissful because you have piles of stuff. You know. So in that, physical suffering, it even comes down to physical suffering. That's just an isness. We're attached to non-suffering, you know, or to non-suffering is the wrong word. We're attached to conditions that don't hurt the body and mind. But look at Thakur. He died of throat cancer. Never a complaint. Never was he caught under that umbrella. And as a matter of fact, several times he reveals to us that he transcended it completely and demonstrated that it has nothing to do with him. As an example to us, our condition of life has nothing to do with us. There are certain promises that God makes, and this is part of this trust thing. There are certain promises he makes. He says, one, I'm never going to push you farther than you can manage. So every test that you have, if you consider it a test, I don't like to think that God tests me. There's no point in that. But if you think that way, know that he never pushes you more than he knows you can manage. He makes a second promise. All things are working together for good. He's made you that promise. And he said that gold can be created in every moment under any circumstance. It's up to you to figure out how to take the conditions that you're in and to mint gold. That's all. Those three promises. Trust God completely. So when somebody passes away, when you lose a good friend, when the stock market crashes, all these things that betray your attachments because you suddenly feel, oh, bad things are happening. No, what you should say is, oh, look, things counter to my attachments are happening. My attachments are being tugged at. Ow. Don't pull on my attachments.
I'm losing my attachments.
That's it. You know, don't pull on my attachments. That's all that's happening. That's what our suffering is. But real suffering is not being conscious of God. But because we live in a relative world, we get used to that suffering and we don't think about it. You know, but that's the real suffering. That's the real suffering. So when by this exercise of the presence of God, we are with him who is our end, it is then useless to return to the means. But we may continue with him our commerce of love, persevering in his holy presence, one while by an act of praise, of adoration, or of desire, one while by an act of resignation or thanksgiving, and in all the ways which our spirit can invent. Do you see what that is? So when by this exercise, what is the exercise? To have complete trust in the Beloved, in his presence and in his embrace and in his acceptance and love for you. So when by this exercise of the presence we are with him, who is our end, that's the whole point of everything. If we're with him, then it's useless to return to the means. Right? If you've already got your groceries, there's no reason to go out grocery shopping. So be with God right now and forget the idea that you have to do something to get him. Forget the idea. The fulfillment of your practice is the presence of the Beloved. So trust completely in the presence of the Beloved. Nothing else is necessary. There's no reason to return to the rest of it. He says, but you can continue with him in your commerce of love, which is an interesting statement, according to Vivekananda, you know, that's our worldly love. If we're caught in that idea, he's like, well, if you have to continue in that way, then you can, just provoking your acceptance of his presence by praising him or adoring him or thinking of him, as is praying to him, thanking him, in all the ways in which our spirit can invent. So that's working with your mind. You know, if you're fully convinced these things are necessary, then do them. But have faith first, and then do them in joy. Do them in response to and not in search of. Big difference. We've talked about that. Do your practice in response to God's love, in response to the fact that he's with you already. Don't do your practice in search of the acceptance of God, in search of the presence of God. No. Then you'll get tired. Then you'll wear out. Because that assumption that you don't have him will put you entirely at the mercy of the ego. So know that you have him first and foremost. And then enjoy your practice. Enjoy your meditation of being with him. You've got any number of little alarms.
It was a spam call anyway.
Indeed.
You know how cell phones nowadays will tell you.
I love that. I love that. Of course, that's the only thing that calls me. Sometimes I call just for company.
You talk to the
marketers
just for fun.
Just for fun. Oh. You love me. You love me more than any of my friends.
I'm not a friend.
All right. Now here, this is quite lovely. This last chair, pretty thing. Be not discouraged by the repugnance which you may find in it from nature. You must do yourself violence. Be not discouraged by the repugnance which you may find in it from nature. Okay, you must do yourself violence. At first, one often thinks it lost time, but you must go on and resolve to persevere in it to death. Notwithstanding all the difficulties that may occur, I recommend myself to the prayers of your holy society and yours in particular. I am, in our Lord, yours. All right, so be not discouraged by the repugnance which you may find in it from nature. Okay, so this is that self-hatred part that's going on, all right? Do not be discouraged by the repugnance that you find in your own ego in when nature is acting on you, not self. You know, Vivekananda also uses the word nature. Nature is what binds us, the laws of the universe, the rules, the relativity. That's nature. He says, don't be discouraged by the repugnance that you'll feel, you know, when by your own ego, by your own error. Many times you'll find when these Christians write, these Christian saints, there's always a paragraph somewhere where they just really delve in to like what a horrible wretch, unworthy of anything that they are. And we have a hard time understanding that, because as Vedantists, we always work from the self and not from the fallen self. But in a way, it's more honest to work from the fallen self because that's what we're experiencing. And it is true that anything that you do where you think you're doing it is in fact repugnant. And the purer you become, the more repugnant that you see in that, you understand in that. And you do come to a point where you see, remember that wonderful vision the Thakur had of a prostitute covered in feces? Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. When what was it that caused that?
Buddha asked him to use asked him to get yogi power.
Okay, yes. All right, so he went for something that was directly attached to ego. And you see the vision that Mother gave him. He said, that's like this. That's what that looks like to me. So when Mother looks or God looks at an ego, that portion of you that's in charge, that portion of you that's forgetful of him, her, that part of you that insists on your vices and depends on your vices, longs for your vices, that part looks like that. But Thakur never confuses that with you. You see? But the scripture here is trying to establish in you that is what you are, that is what the ego is, and if you identify it with it, if you say, that's me, that's what you're doing. You're embracing that image as self. All right? But he's saying here, don't do that, first of all. But as you see that lower self, as you begin to understand that lower self, don't be discouraged by it. Don't be discouraged by it. But go on. Don't let it become a feeling of lost time. I'm failing. Oh, I've wasted so much time on nonsense. Whatever. Don't hear the story of it. Be committed unto death to let go of it, to identify yourself with the renewed self, with the blissful self, with that part of you that God is associating with. That you, not part of you, but that you that God is associating with. The you that Thakur sees.
What if you must do yourself
wild? Slap your hand when you try and hold on. Stop it. No mind. You know, the doing yourself is when you're still identified with it, which is the honest thing. Most of us are identifying with that self. Otherwise, we wouldn't feel this discontent. You know, we wouldn't feel this self-hatred, this disappointment in ourselves. He's saying when your mind wants to hold on to those things, when it wants to hold on to that story, when it wants to make those things affect the present moment, respond violent toward that thing. It's yourself if you're identified with it. He doesn't use that language because Christians don't have that same paradigm. But for us, that's the paradigm. Don't be discouraged by your faults and by the errors of mind. Don't. Because they, in the end, have nothing to do with you. They are not you. They never were you. There is no journey.
It seems like Christians look at things too negatively. If you think in terms of the mind, people have both positive and negative tendencies. And if you focus on the negative tendencies, you depress yourself.
Well,
if you remind yourself of the positive tendencies, you're not quite so. Now, the idea of thinking of yourself as your spiritual self, where you see yourself as a part of God, that is tremendous, but you don't hear about that in Christianity too much.
Yeah, nowadays it's true. It's true. But we have to be careful, though, because there's no such things as Christians. Oh. There's people, individuals, okay. And you will find Christians that are marvelously adjusted and walking in the beloved light with God. And you'll find Christians that are completely deluded and voting for the wrong people all the time.
Okay.
Anyway.
This idea of nature as belonging to ego,
Is it the same idea that we find in the Gita and the Sankhya perspective of Prakriti and Purusha? Prakriti being nature and Purusha being the...
No, that's talking much higher up the scale in theory. We're much more at ground level here. Vivekananda, in his lecture on what religion is, he says that all religion's quest is for freedom over nature, to push back against nature, to push back against all of the laws, restrictions, and limitations of body-mind. All of those laws and restrictions and their requisite demands and karma, religion is about squashing those, overcoming that, completely obliterating the idea of nature, controlling nature. So that it's more talking about seeing ourselves as limited, restricted, and deluded and degraded.
Mm.
Yeah. But you must go on. You must go on. So you're sitting there, okay, this is a sentence for me. Because 2 days ago, I got so discouraged by my complete and utter lack of my ability to meditate that I got up 15 minutes before I was supposed to and went up and went to bed. That's not what he's talking about here. He's saying, no, don't be discouraged by it.
How did you deal
you must
with
go
it
on.
Afterwards? Did you feel bad about it?
No, just the next morning I said, I'm not getting up early today. Or I'm not going to get up for my practice early today. And today I had the same experience. Today I had the funniest experience. I swear, I promise you, I know it doesn't sound possible, but I had 5 minutes left to my meditation time for like half an hour. Every time I opened my eyes and peeked at the clock, I still had 5 minutes left. And it didn't seem to matter how long I kept meditating. I was like, and I literally thought that the clock, the battery must have been gone. There must have been something wrong. Because I literally, every time I peeked, it was not moving. And I was like, Ma, come on. You know, but we made it. I made it. And then actually, after I made it, I made myself do another minute. So that hand was actually a little bit under the quarter after. You know. But I swear that mother sat there and held it at 5 minutes for like half an hour. I swear it. I know that that's what she was doing. But don't be discouraged. Why? Because you can only be discouraged if you're believing the story. Don't believe the story. You are in the presence of God. You're not trying to be in the presence of God. Yourself has been meditating in perfect patience for thousands of years, inhabiting one body after another, after another, after another. For thousands of years, it sits there in perfect contentment. Be that, and manage 5 more minutes.
That's interesting.
Be that. What is time to the timeless? What is impurity to the pure? What is sadness to the blissful? Let it be that. And be free. And that's the end of the sixth letter.